This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
What's up? What's happening on what we're going to call a Remix Thursday here on the Team 980? Nothing to do with the go-go remixes that Anthony's playing. It's just we're going to remix the whole show today. Typically on Thursdays, our show goes something like, never read the comments at 5:30. We have, of course, our mock drafts that we've been doing typically in the 4 o'clock hour. Last week, but we've been doing a lot of mock draft stuff on Thursday early on in the show. And today, Anthony, we decided to just throw it up in the air and see where it landed.
Yes, we did. I'm excited to see how it turns out. I think it's going to turn out good.
If not, it's your fault because you planned the whole thing.
Bet.
You really did put this rundown together. And I kept staring at it going, it doesn't feel right because it doesn't feel normal, right? And I had to check myself and go, no, this is good the way we have it. It's just not what we're used to. It's not the way we've been doing business. And if we hate it, then we'll never stray from this again. Although we're going to have to figure out next Thursday, Anthony, because next Thursday is the first round of the NFL draft, and we're not doing 3 hours.
We're doing four.
We're doing four.
Maybe five.
No, we're doing four.
Okay, just making sure.
I do think we're off at 6:15 Wednesday and Friday, though.
Ooh, for real?
Yeah, because the Nats.
I'm so sad.
I know. It's crushing the day before and after the NFL draft. If there were 2 days on the calendar that I would pick, it wouldn't be those two. But I do believe because the Capitals playoff schedule is out, those games will be over on 106.7 The Fan, and thus we get the Nationals over here, and that's the way that goes. Today, though, my day started with a bearded man talking football, which is not anything new, because normally I tape the Take Command podcast with Logan Paulson. In this case, it was just a different bearded man. This one's Jeremy Green. We did a mock draft ourselves this morning. It was supposed to be a 7-round mock draft, Anthony, but by the time we got done making a million trades, we wound up with our final pick at number 128. We unloaded some of the 7th-rounders.
Oh, my.
So we were done. It was kind of funny. We were talking at the end, and the mock draft simulator is just still going because we had set it up for all 7 rounds. I have no idea what happens rounds 5 through 7 in that draft. Anthony and I at 5 o'clock are going to embark on mock draft 2.0 for this show. We will pick the entire first round, alternating picks. Anthony will be first, and thus he will also be 29th. Trades are live if someone wants to make one, although we'll talk more about why. I don't know how actually that's going to affect things as we get later on in the show and as we get into that mock draft. You'll hear some of what Jeremy and I talked about, including a very interesting James Pierce discussion. He is not hearing some of the same things as everybody else. I still don't know that I fully buy it, but we'll talk about it coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. And then right now, we'll get to where my day went from after talking football. I got in the car, sped down, not sped, officer, I went the speed limit. Got myself in as quickly as I could legally down to what is now known as Care First Arena, the MedStar Health Performance Center formerly known as ESA, Entertainment Sports Arena, where the Wizards held their season-ending press conference with Will Dawkins. And the Wizards general manager spoke for about 45 minutes, a lot of interesting stuff. And I think it's interesting not because he said anything really revolutionary or in many ways revelatory, but I do think it continues to show that these are executives who get it. They have a plan, and they are constantly evaluating that plan. But there's just a couple things I wanted to highlight here, wanted to point out about what Will Dawkins said for Wizards fans and to kind of flush out some of this. The first thing is they are not trying to sell us a bill of goods in the way that I think a lot of the former executives in Washington tried to sell us a bill of goods with this team. I mean, I'm still of the thought that some part of Tommy Shepard getting fired by the Wizards happened because he kept saying they were close. And eventually Ted Leonsis realized that was not the case. That was not realistic. And he said it on this show, but I'm sure that he also said it like in meetings and stuff, and they weren't close. And trying to sell us that just made us feel like we were taking crazy pills. And Will Dawkins today said that they are getting closer than perhaps when they took over, which duh, but that they are still not remotely close enough. And this dose of reality, especially amidst this very long-term rebuild, is something I appreciated.
Around here, we talk about it all the time. We're going to acknowledge the growth. We are going to celebrate every small win. We're going to keep our head down and keep stacking days, keep working hard until we look up, see where we're at, put our head back down, and get back to work. You've heard it time and time again, but we realize we're still in that early phase of fighting for sustained success. Like, that's what we're trying to get here, our longevity, where when we enter into the playoffs, it's us there for a while, not in and out. And to do that, we got to build slowly and build the right way. And while we understand we're not close, we are closer. And that's the goal every single season. And I do feel like we laid some bricks to the foundation this year. And now that the season is officially over, we sat down with the guys. And my message was, from the time you guys all ran out on the court to go celebrate with Bob to the time we officially picked the ball up October 1st for training camp, there's 170 days. 170 days. There's 365 days in the year, so that's roughly 46% of the year that we're off. Like, we can't be off. We have to turn that into time where players are getting better, team's getting better, everybody's taking a jump. And I kind of challenge them to be different players when they come back.
I will continue to say this about Will Dawkins. I don't want to play for that guy. And I think we're lucky in town right now that there's a lot of executives like that. I don't know that Adam Peters is as inspiring at a podium necessarily. I think that Adam is pretty averse to saying anything, where I think Will is very careful about what he says. But that's very different than averse to saying anything. I think that's in part because they realize that they need the coverage, and they are always in Monumental Basketball. Jamila did this for the Mystics press conference. Michael Winger does this every time he talks as the president. And Will does this seemingly every time he talks as the general manager on the Wizards side. Like, they always thank the press for their coverage, especially considering how their season is right now. It might butter us up, but I actually think it is genuine gratitude because they realize the team is not very good. And if they don't explain what's happening, then it just lets people be angry. But imagine you get through a season like they just went through, where you may have made a lot of personal growth, but you didn't win a lot of games. And you're like, all right, well, hopefully next year we're going to win a lot more. And your GM sits there in front of the whole team and says to all of you, we all got to be better. 46% of the year is going to go by, calendar-wise, between now and when we tip off on opening night. How different are you going to be by then? That speaks to me. That if I was an athlete, if I was a coach, if I was a scout, if I was anybody in that room, that would speak to me. Because that is a challenge that feels purposeful and realistic to become a different, better whatever. I hope I'm a better radio host. And what do you say, Anthony? October 1st is when they get together for training camp, I think is what he said.
Yep.
If this show's not better by October 1st, then we're not doing a great job. Like, it just is. And especially if we got the next 6 months off to try to plan and strategize, and all we did was work on things that made us better. We didn't actually have to do it. I think we should do an experiment, Anthony. No shows till October 1st. No.
Yeah.
We still have to work, to be clear.
Yes.
We're not off. We do a lot of listening to other shows, maybe get some ideas. We listen back to our own stuff. We would do mock shows where we try stuff out, see if it works. How good I'll make our bosses a deal. We'll even come back for week one of the NFL. We'll come back September. We'll do it before. We'll take Will Dawkins, your 46%. We'll do like 43%. You think they'll go for it?
No.
I don't think so either. Okay, when we get back, what is Will Dawkins trying to build? You'll hear more from the Wizards GM before we give you a special 4 o'clock hour edition of Never Read the Comments at 4:30.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Mock Draft 2.0 for the Hoffman Show coming up at 5 p.m. Wizards GM Will Dawkins speaking today to the collected press, crammed in a room over at ESPN. Yeah, the Wizards get enough coverage. Next year, we're going to need a bigger room, Wizards PR. We were sitting there, and we almost were at capacity in terms of the number of chairs. But that's a good thing. That's a good thing because the Wizards are building something very, very interesting in terms of the young players that they had and or they have. And one thing that I think is worth playing first before we get into some of the stuff from the season and we get to some of the growth of the individual players and all that stuff. Next year is going to probably look very similar. And I appreciated Varun Shankar asking this question of the Washington Post because the Wizards next year have a top 8 protected pick, meaning if their pick is in the top 8, they get to keep the pick. And it goes back to a trade made years ago with the New York Knicks that just continually is getting pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. The protection's getting heavier and heavier and heavier and heavier. Or I should say lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter. And if it gets pushed out any farther, it actually is just going to dissipate. Though I think it's 2 second round picks go to the Knicks if the Wizards are picking 9 or worse next year. Now, if they're picking 9 or worse, it means they've had a market improvement in terms of how good they are. And that's ultimately a good thing. But it is worth asking. I don't know how, you know, honest Will Dawkins can be if the answer is like, we're going to suck again. But in terms of the youth movement, it is fair to, I think it's safe to say that they're gonna approach next year very similarly than they did this year. It's just with a lot of the same guys who will be a year older and a year better.
The pick's been encumbered since we got here. I don't think it's affected how we want to go about things too much. The plan is to continue to grow through young players. If our young players make a massive jump and we go forward, But in terms of the deconstruction, the foundation piece that I was talking about, building it back up and fortifying it, I'd say we're probably still on that little, is that a right angle? Is that what we do? That little corner, that deconstruction, build foundation, like we're still down here. We're still in the early phases of what we're trying to do. I think we found some players and laid some bricks that will allow us to continue to build, kind of build that base, but I think we're still over here in this little corner.
So, you know, Will's talked about the deconstruction phase a lot, and Michael Winger's talked about it as well. Like, they had to tear it down, and it sounds to me like they are exiting that. You know, Will said in the answer we played in the last segment that they've laid a couple of bricks. To me, they're kind of pouring the concrete now. Like, okay, we finally are done tearing down the previous building. We're digging a big hole, and we're about to pour some concrete in. You know, maybe even the hole is dug. And now this jump season, this off season, is when they pour some concrete. Next year, they try to start building on it. We're still a long way from, you know, scaffolding and structure and, you know, then God forbid, windows and furnishings. But there is at least starting to be more than a just demolition that is happening. And obviously, one of the young guys at the head of that is the number two overall pick from last year, Alex Sarr, who I would say somewhat quietly had a really, really good season. One, that if he builds on it in the way that other people that have had similar seasons built on it could put him in rarefied air in the NBA, which is, I think, not what is projected for him, but so far so good for a kid who's barely 20 years old.
For a 19-year-old, I think we're all pretty impressed with the fight that Alex Sarr showed this season. Obviously, Marcus and a lot of people in the organization see where he can go, which is a pretty high level. So, of course, he's going to continue to talk to him and continue to work on those things. And trust me, we've had a lot of conversations with Alex Sarr about who he is, who he wants to be, and he wants to be great. And we're going to try to give him every resource to do that. And if you run his numbers, it was pretty impressive for the rookie campaign that he had. Because Alex, to me, is not just a defensive player. I think he's a defensive-first player. It took him a little while to kind of establish himself on the offensive end, but he's an all-around player. And only rookie in the NBA to be top five in points, top five in blocks, top five in rebounds, and I'm pretty sure he was the number one big in assists. So the guy knows how to play and has an impact on both ends. We ran the numbers. One of three players with 100 assists, 100 blocks, 100 plus blocks. The list of rookies that have averaged like double-digit points and 1.5 blocks is pretty insane. Like, it's a ridiculous list. And then when you make that list 12 points, 1.5 blocks, and 2 assists, it's pretty good company. I'm not going to tell you who's on it, but if you want to do the research, we showed them the names, and there's a lot of Hall of Famers, a lot of Rookie of the Years, like high-level players. So Alex had a tremendous season. We love that people still want more for him because we know he can do it, but he's well on his way.
So I would guess Will Dawkins knows this about me. I love a challenge. I love looking up stats. I love looking up numbers. Luckily, this one was pretty easy. The list of players in their rookie season with 12 or better points per game and 1.5 or better blocks per game. It's not a short list, but it's not a long list. I got 25 that are listed here since 1973-1974. Anthony, are you ready for the list of players who have gotten 12 plus points per game and 1.5 blocks per game in their rookie season?
Yeah.
Sarr, Chet Holmgren, Victor Wembanyama, Evan Mobley, Andre Ingram, but that one doesn't count. He only played 2 games with the Lakers, so scrap him. Joel Embiid, Karl-Anthony Towns, Porzingis, Anthony Davis, Brooke Lopez, Emeka Okafor, Yao Ming, Pau Gasol, Elton Brand, Vince Carter, Tim Duncan, Zydrunas Ilgauskas, Marcus Camby, Antonio McDice, Joe Smith, Chris Webber, Alonzo Mourning, Shaquille O'Neal, Dikembe Mutombo, David Robinson.
25?
So it's really 24, because whoever Andre Ingram is doesn't count. He played 2 games.
You remember him?
No.
He was a guard, to be honest.
Sure.
He got like a 10-day contract or something like that. Played with the Lakers.
Yeah, that's he was with the Lakers. The worst player on this list, all due respect to Andre Ingram, who we're kicking off the list, like a Mecca Okafor, Antonio McDice was a pretty good player in some knee stuff. He plays in a different era. He's probably a better player because the medical would have been better. Joe Smith, like, this list is sick. All these dudes are all-stars or future all-stars. Every single one of them. Because, like, even Okafor was a pretty decent player, like, defensively for a couple years. I would think Okafor is probably the worst guy on this list. And offensively, Emeka Okafor did not have the feel, the handle, the skills that Alex Saar has.
Yeah, I mean, I think Okafor was a pretty good player. Like, right. all of those guys were, to be honest. Like, and to say, you know, he's the quote-unquote worst of that list,
right,
is saying something, because when he was with Chris Paul, you know, in New Orleans, the Hornets were pretty good. So
yeah, he's absolutely part of winning teams and drove them defensively.
Yep.
Which fits in, by the way, nice accidental transition there, to what Will Dawkins wants this team to be. They want to be a defensive team.
We will be known as a defensive team. We weren't good enough this year. Especially at the beginning of the year, we struggled mightily early. I think as guys, it's going to sound weird, but as guys got older throughout the year, they definitely got more comfortable playing, using their hands, not fouling as much, being in the right position, knowing what players can and can't do, learning players' tendencies. I think we made a few moves at the trade deadline to add some defensive-minded vets as well. And I think that's when you kind of saw the system that BK wants moving forward. And probably I'd say that February to mid-March, before we took that 13-day, 7-game road trip where we had a couple guys go down for the season, we were a top 15 or so defense in the NBA. So not where we want to be, but a lot closer to what we want it to look like. So for us, we saw some things on that end as well and made marginal improvements in specific areas we were looking to do as well. So we're getting closer.
They're getting closer, but not close enough for what they want. They understand it's a long process. They'll put their heads down and work. Again, like, Bob Carrington's 19. Alex Saar, 19. Keyshawn George is not even 21 years old yet. I mean, Jordan Poole's still young. Like, they've got so... A.J. Johnson, you know, Will talked about him today and was basically like, we see him as like when the high school quarterback comes to spring practice and he gets there early. Next year is really his freshman year. You know, his rookie year. It's obviously not going to be technically his rookie year, but they looked at him as an extra piece that they acquired in that Kyle Kuzma deal that will be a part of their future, but is almost part of next year's draft class. By the way, one last note. Tonight, you are rooting hard for the Memphis Grizzlies. Ja Morant questionable with that ankle injury, but if the Grizzlies can win, tomorrow night, if the Grizzlies win and make the playoffs, they will have the late teens or maybe the 20th pick, and that pick will go to the Wizards. If not, then the Wizards will get second rounders next year. So big completion of the Marcus Smart trade there. That could be another first round pick for Washington this season. And if they're in that late 20 or, you know, late teens, it's very easy for them to add a couple second rounders or whatever else they need to do and move up and get back into the lottery if there's a player they want. Or maybe even if they wind up losing out and with their own lottery pick and they wind up, you know, picking fourth or fifth, could they get up to second or third by combining another first round pick? So a very essential piece for Will Dawkins to deal with, to play with, depending on what happens for the Grizzlies tomorrow night. All right, that is most of what I wanted to let you hear from Will Dawkins today. He had some great stuff on Brian Keefe. He had some great stuff on why they had that turnaround in the second half of the season, talked about how connected they were and kind of figuring out how to play with each other. Great stuff on Corey Kispert as a leader, just really, really good stuff, and a phenomenal last question that he answered about, or phenomenal answer about Bob Carrington and just what he showed this year playing in all 82 games, dealing with you know, the death of his father late in the year, the maturity that he showed throughout that the entire season for a kid who's so young, the fight. They are very, very high on Bub for very good reason. So if you want to check that out, I know Monumental Sports had it up on their YouTube page if you want to watch the entire press conference, because you're a sicko like me and you watch the whole press conference, or in my case, you were there. All right, that is the Wizards of it all for today. When we get back, it is time for Never Read the Comments. It's Hoffman Show here on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Mixing things up on a Thursday, typically at 5:30. We hit Never Read the Comments, our mock drafts are in the first hour, but you 4 o'clock hour folks, you got a mock draft last week. And also, you're going to get home early if you're listening on the radio right now. So you can go home and listen to us live, or you can listen back on the podcast or watch the video. Because the mock draft, we're going to do one for the 5 o'clock hour folks today, which means, though, that you get a treat that they normally get, and we call it Never Read the Comments.
We tried to warn them. They didn't listen.
Yeah!
Every week, the Hoffman Show goes into the belly of the beast.
We read those comments, baby!
Never read the comments.
So the way this works is our show is live on YouTube every day, which means we have all this 3 hours worth of video, and then we chop it up and put it on demand, and all the segments, or at least a lot of the segments, and then you guys comment on it. And then we take a look at the comments. I interact with them at Craig Hoffman and at the Team 980. And then we even pick a few out and we read them and react to them on the radio. So sometimes I'm a little typey-typey back to you. And sometimes I'm a little shouty-shouty back to you. Or talky-talky. I try not to shout on this show too much, Anthony.
JK.
Hey now. Hey now. I'll shout at you. Let's get started. Our big topic today is going to be on the RFK story that broke yesterday. The Commanders likely returning back to RFK Stadium in 2030. But first, just a shout out to one of our interviews that we did. Peter Ranney, 9488, says, love to hear from Bub, because he listened to the Bub Carrington interview that we did late last week. He is so fun to watch this year. I really like the answer about working on the pick and roll defense, because I know a kid like that is going to get his shots up in the offseason no matter what. But if he can get his on-ball defense figured out, he could be an absolute dude in the league. Bub was great when we had him. And again, the maturity that he has, and obviously the game. And Anthony, why doesn't every athlete want to come on our show?
They should, right?
What sport do we get the most from? What team in town is the best to us with their players?
Probably the Mystics.
The Mystics are great. And?
The Wizards.
And?
The Commanders.
The correct answer you'll get to eventually. The soccer team, Anthony. The Spirit.
Who was I saying? The Mystics? I kept on trying to say this.
You like I already said them. Yeah, no, the Mystics have been great. You know, we will talk to a bunch of their players at Media Day. And
the Spirit,
they were great,
yes.
Coming on last year. But the Spirit have been the kindest in terms of getting us players over the three, almost 4 years that we've been doing this show. And often when their players come on, they score in the ensuing game. They just go on tears. Well, Bub came on next game, or that weekend, he hits the game winner to close out the season in Miami. I'm just saying, if you're a DC athlete and you want to have a good week, holler at your boys. We'll welcome you on. We'll talk to you about your story. We'll let people get to know you. And then you'll be good at your sport. Who loses?
Good things happen, man.
The answer is the opponents. The players, the teams not from the District of Columbia and surrounding areas. That's all I got to say about that. All right, RFK Stadium. It looks like it's going to be the home of the Commanders once again in 2030. Stephen Chisholm, 421, says, Josh Harris doesn't mess around. Man gets stuff done. He didn't say stuff, Anthony. I'm going to say stuff because it's the radio.
Yeah, I saw your hand gesture, so I understood what you were saying.
Made a parenthesis with the hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Gets stuff done. I think there's two different ways you can go about spending $6 billion. I'm going to guess because I don't have $6 billion to spend. You can either spend $6 billion and then be like, I spent $6 billion. I got no money left. Or you can spend $6 billion and go, I didn't spend $6 billion to then be cheap. It's too expensive to be cheap. So yeah, Josh Harris was going to get this done. And that leaves us to this comment by Chasing Sleep, at Chasing-Sleep, which, Anthony, I'm just going to say on the front end of this is not how I would word this. I am just reading the comment, although I think there is some truth to the sentiment. Chasing-Sleep says, These D.C. residents are ungrateful SOBs. Without the Harris Group getting Congress to pass the RFK bill, then the federal government would still own the land. Then no one would be able to redevelop the land. Also, to the residents worrying about giving money to build a stadium, my argument is if you want to redevelop the land, it would still cost taxpayer money to redevelop the land. So I think this is a convoluted comment with some truth, some false, and an unnecessary swipe at a particular sect of D.C. residents. I'm not necessarily into calling people SOBs, at least this particular group of SOBs. I do think the point that nobody was going to be more successful lobbying Congress than Josh Harris and his group or some other competent NFL group is probably correct. I do not know that there was a group of lobbyists in D.C. Boy, do we have a lot of them. I don't know that there's a group of lobbyists on behalf of D.C. that could have unlocked the RFK land. And they've had years to try, just as the team has. And the reason is very simple, because I think it in some ways unpoliticizes it. And again, I am this is the one political issue I have no problem talking about on this show. I am extremely for D.C. statehood. As a D.C. resident, I pay federal taxes. I have no extra say in the government. And people make all these stupid arguments about, if you want to keep the White House and Congress and the actual like Capitol building, and you want to create a federal district that says these buildings are not state, that's fine. Nobody lives there. I, as a United States citizen, would like some senators. And the fact that I can't call anybody to complain about that because I don't have representatives is actually the entire point. If you don't get it based off that, then you're just unwillingly going to get it. But because of the fact that DC votes 90% Democrat, Republicans do not have a political incentive to give DC statehood, and thus DC statehood and anything involving DC self-governance is very unlikely to get done when it has to go through Congress. By making it about a football team and a football stadium, there's some depoliticization that happens there. They go, oh, okay, well, the NFL is like someone that we like. We like football. A football stadium. This goes back in history to what it used to be. Let's do it. And I think that unlocks it in a way that if a group of DC activists that were trying to do something on behalf of just the citizens of DC, I don't think it gets as far. Now, that does not mean that the second part of this is true, that the actual best use of this land, if it was just free land for DC to do whatever with, which, by the way, I will say this, technically is what happened. Josh Harris and them lobbied because they wanted to unlock the land for DC, and like that's the way the bill was written. But it happened with the understanding that it's going to turn into a football stadium, right? So like we can acknowledge those two things at once. Technically, what happened was they returned the land to D.C. But if that was done without any strings attached and there was no pressure to put on a football stadium, sure, green spaces and grocery stores and affordable housing, like that could be argued as a better use of taxpayer money. And would generate a ton of revenue because the taxes on the groceries and the housing and the income taxes and all that kind of stuff. So those two arguments don't necessarily go together. We can have that nuanced conversation, but there's also just eventually a hard reality that the best way to get that land unlocked and stop just rotting and having nothing done with it like has been going for the last 30 years or most of the last 30 years. And even sometimes when the building was in use, Anthony, it was still rotting beneath the fans that were going to DC United games and Washington Nationals games in the early days as the stadium fell apart around them. The best way this land was going to get unlocked was a football stadium. And sometimes you have to deal in reality, and we're going to have to take a little less housing, a few less grocery stores and green space acreage for a football stadium, because otherwise we wouldn't have gotten anything at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all in favor for, you know, the team moving back to, you know, RFK Stadium. Again, I live directly across, well, my family anyway, live directly across the bridge. And my dad, my uncles and aunts, like, they had no problem, you know, making their way over to RFK Stadium. When we were, you know, in the 90s and the early 2000s over there. So I think people will come to like appreciate the team being back, to be honest, and not necessarily have as many complaints. There are going to be some people that have complaints, but like I think the vast majority will be all in favor for it.
Mr. C.S. Sylvester. So the first caller moves near a stadium, because remember, we had Bill in D.C., who I actually think commented on this as well. We'll get to his comment next. So the first caller moves near a stadium that gets upset that the team might move back to the site. Then he used the clown emoji, which I typically hate, but sometimes understand the urge to use. We don't care what you want. The stadium should go right where RFK already is. This is part of my argument as well, that if you moved, you've either been at RFK long enough that you dealt with it the first time, or you moved in knowing there was a really good chance they would go back. There really is no in between, unless you like moved in the year after they moved out. So that argument falls flat. William Cullen P3B, who I think is Bill in DC, because I think he was in the chat yesterday, said, one thing you have to remember, politicians don't care about taxpayers. They care about donors. That's why it was so silly for that reporter talking about Mark Seagraves, the reporter who broke this story, to bring up the Eastern High School meeting. Donors don't go to meetings. They call the mayor directly, and her donors don't want it. Bill, this is the thing she has probably been the most passionate about, she being Mayor Bowser, in her entire administration. If her donors don't want it, they're barking up the wrong tree because she wants it. So how good are the donors? Also, politicians care about donors right up to the point that the voters, who are the taxpayers, vote them out. So I think that comment is incorrect on all fronts. DMV Most Wanted. I live in Ward 7, and I understand why people want different things there, but it's been decades of DC not doing a damn thing in that area. I know for sure the only way to leverage DC to make moves in that area is to put a stadium there first. I think that is the main point that I kind of walk away with the data reflect on this, Anthony, is I think I understand the economists and you know, even the folks in the neighborhood's argument that there's a better use for this land. And it's kind of like hope, you know, it's having a theoretical path to make $1 million when I'm handing you $100,000. Sure. Theoretically, could you do something else and get $100,000 or get $1 million? Yeah. Or you could just take the $100,000. And this is the $100,000.
Yeah, I think I'm not gonna lie, Craig, like what they've done to the area so far, I'm not even all that big of a fan of. I do like the fields that they have over there. But as far as the bike lanes and the fact there's only one lane on I don't know what street that is anymore, but it goes around RFK Stadium, I'm just not a big fan of it. So like I'll be interested to see how the rest of it gets built up, just because I think obviously they're building towards something, so hopefully it just ultimately makes sense.
There's also a lot of NIMBYism in that neighborhood. There's a lot of gentrification in that neighborhood.
Too much.
And I really just don't want to hear it from rich folks who kicked out poor folks that they're going to have to deal with something that a lot of other people want. I just don't have a lot of sympathy for you. And that's, you know, that's the way it is. Like, look, I live in a neighborhood that used to be very different demographically somewhere in DC. I'm not going to give away where I live. And that's just like, that is also a reality of Earth. I don't begrudge the people that necessarily live there, but what I'm telling you is you don't have a right to complain. You know, if there's go-go music outside my window because I live close to a bunch of bars, or I live close to, you know, a place where people have been doing that for years on the block, like I chose to live there. You chose to live in a place where the name of your neighborhood is like the RFK neighborhood, the RFK Stadium neighborhood. Like, what'd you think was going to happen? I just don't have a lot of sympathy nor empathy for those folks who are making those complaints. If you have different complaints, fine. And you are more than welcome to use your voice in the political process, but be prepared to lose. Mock Draft 2.0 coming up at 5 o'clock for us. And Anthony, before we do that, we got reactions to our mock draft from last week. Again, I took Emeka Egbuka at 29 for the Commanders, the way the board fell. Austin Aggie, which feels like his name should be Austin Muggie, and he forgot the M. But Austin, maybe it's Austin Aggie, 4640, says, I like the pick at 29. I would not be disappointed at all in adding one of the best receivers in the class. Do we need edge help? Yes, but I have faith in the coaching staff to work with what we have and maybe add another piece eventually somewhere before the season starts. Loading up on weapons around JD5 also seems like a good idea. Meanwhile, KingSaw5282 says, Egbuka? Nah. So he's out on it. While Brian says, Brian Mulholland2467 says, I really like Scorton, as in the other edge from Texas A&M. I think a lot of folks are sleeping on him. Harmon would have been pretty sweet, too. Per Egbuka, I'd rather have Jaden Higgins. 29 is a bit rich for him, but it is for Egbuka, too, in my opinion. And I read all those comments together, Anthony, just to remind folks that everyone's got different opinions on everything. Some people think Emeka Egbuka is a top 20 player in this draft. Some people, like Brian, think he belongs closer to the 30s and 40s. I think in a deeper draft at the top, 30s is probably about right for me. I think, like, I like Egbuka, but I'm not going to be, like, if that's the pick at 29, I'm like, all right, we got Egbuka. Not, yeah, we got Egbuka. In the same way that, like, if Donovan Ezeraku falls, I'll be way more excited. I think Egbuka is just so solid. And I think he's everything they want off the field, in the locker room, in the weight room, all of that stuff. He fits so perfectly with the culture here. And he's a good, good, good football player. But the explosive, like, high upside, is this guy ever going to be one of the best dudes in the league? That's probably not who you're getting there. And for that reason, I kind of understand all of these comments, even though they all run face first into each other.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, I just don't think he's one of those guys like the Justin Jeffersons, the CeeDee Lambs that went early 20s in a deeper draft. And everybody's like, yeah, we got our guy. And, you know, for him to fall to us at 29, I think some people going to view it as more so a reach, or, you know, somebody that we could have maybe gotten in, you know, the second round. But I don't think he'll be available for us in the second round. But he's a second round talent kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it's just not a top heavy draft. And, you know, Jeremy Green, who you'll hear from later on in the show, he thinks like from 10 to 50. Those dudes are all pretty interchangeable, depending on your flavor, what you like. Like, that is where the depth is in this draft. And thus, if you are picking between 10 and 30, you're not really getting great value. And that's also going to make trades hard, which makes what I'm about to say kind of silly. We're going to do a mock draft where trades are live next. And we'll see if anybody wants to do any dealing. Of course, one of the other guys we talked about was Donovan Ezeraku. And 7PRS965 says, if he's a Commander, I'm buying a jersey in every color.
He sounds excited.
He does. But I think, unfortunately, Tommy DeMar, E1M, is going to be right. Don't see him falling to 29. I think some of the mock drafts and, like, the draft simulators have him lower, and thus in a lot of mock drafts, he keeps falling. But one thing to keep in mind, too, I think it's Jeff Hathaway is the guy's name, who is now the defensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. He recruited Donovan Ezeraku to Boston College when he was the head coach. The Packers could use edge help. Good luck getting Donovan Ezeraku past the Packers. Just throw that in the back of your mind to make yourself sad. And then if it doesn't happen, celebrate. Celebrate with joy. The next mock draft you'll hear, though, is us. And we're doing it next. Let's never read the comments. Always make sure that you leave yours and subscribe at Craig Hoffman, at the Team 980. When we get back, it is time to go back into the war room for Mock Draft 2.0.